Here you go. Everybody knows what I'm going to say next, or almost everybody. And that is, turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It is the book of Devarim, or Deuteronomy, the last in the five of the books of Moshe, a.k.a. the, with a capital T and a capital T, the Torah. And we're in some of the, I guess you'd say, major meat of the entire speech that Moses or Moshe is giving to the people of Israel before he is fixing to head up to the mountain and then pass on. And it starts in chapter 7, goes through chapter 11, but about verse 12. And as you know, the Torah portion in Hebrew begins with some words which we may or may not have heard before, things like, and Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and that kind of thing. But when we get to the first unique word, that is the way for which the parsha, the portion, is named, and it comes like this week. It says, Ve'haya, and it shall come to pass. And that word in Hebrew, literally, there is ekev. So, it'll come to pass, ekev, that, or because, you hearken, there's that root word shamar again, and keep and do these things, these ordinances, that Yahuwah your Elohim will keep with you, the covenant that he swore unto your fathers. And kind of right off the top, one of the things I think is interesting about that word in Hebrew, the word ekev there, is that the root is a heel. The part of your body that's called the heel is ekev. And it's sometimes is translated as because, and the implication is kind of fascinating. If you look at the root etymology of the word, because the heel comes first. Heel toe, heel toe, heel toe. So because, it follows that, it shall come to pass. As the heel, then comes the toe. So that's kind of how this begins. And then all of these things, of course, Ekev, because they will come to pass. He will love you and bless you and multiply you. He'll also bless the fruit of your body, the fruit of your land, your corn, your wine, your oil, the increase of your cattle and all those things. All of this because he swore to give you this and of the land in the land which he swore to your fathers. And you shall be blessed above all peoples, not a male or a female barren among your cattle or among you. And Yahuwah, it says, will take away from you all sickness, and he'll put none of the evil diseases of Mitzrayim, of Egypt, upon you, which you know pretty well, but instead he will lay them upon those that hate you. And you will consume all of the peoples that Yahuwah will deliver unto you. You're not supposed to pity him, nor will you serve their gods. And that theme, of course, we've seen before. It is really, really key. It's part of the reason why so much of the things that weren't supposed to happen, but we knew, and he knew, and Moshe told him would happen, did happen, all has to do with paganism, with idolatry, and serving those other gods that they weren't supposed to. And he says here, don't do that because it will be, and in fact it was, a snare to you. And in fact, then, if you say in your heart, these nations are really powerful, they're bigger, stronger than I am, how can I possibly dispossess them? Well, don't be afraid of them, because you remember what Yahuwah did unto Pharaoh back when you were still in Egypt. All the great trials which you saw, the signs and wonders, the things that were done by the mighty hand and the outstretched arm, whereby Yahuwah your El brought you out. Well, so again will Yahuwah your El, your God, do unto all the peoples that you seem to be so afraid of. And moreover, Yahuwah will send the hornet among them, till they that are left that hide themselves will perish from before you. Don't be frightened of them, for Yahuwah your El is in the midst of you. And he is, in fact, an Elohim, a God great and awesome. And furthermore, it says, Yahuwah your El will cast out all those nations before you, little by little. Not too quickly, because otherwise the beasts of the field might increase upon you. But Yahuwah, in fact, will deliver them up before you and discomfit them with a great discomfiture until they're destroyed. He'll deliver their kings into your hand. You will literally make their name to perish from under heaven. No man will be able to stand against you until you are done destroying them. Now, here's another one of those places where I've mentioned this before. We're going to see the same thing again in this week's portion. The vigor, the level of intensity with which the idols, the pagan places, the asherim, the groves, all of these idolatrous things are to be destroyed. And it says it again in places like verse 25. The graven images of their Elohim you shall burn with fire. Don't even covet the silver or gold that's on them, nor take it into you, lest you be snared by it. for it is an abomination unto Yahuwah your El. Now, this is one of those things, and this is one of the places. Chapter 7 in Devarim, we're going to see it again in chapter 12, chapter 13. This is one of the places, and when it comes to things that I would say separate, if you will, the first century, the scriptural understanding of... Well, what the Bible really says, as opposed to what men say, he should have said if he's as smart as they think they are. And so many of the things that have ensnared much of Christianity, and yeah, much of rabbinic Judaism as well. Pagan elements that have crept in that we were warned about that are still there, and people tend to say, oh, it, you know, it's not a problem. But the key is the following, and this is why I point people to the end of chapter 7 in Deuteronomy. If you really want to see why it is that this paganism is such a big deal, and why it is that, oh, you know, what's the problem with some bunnies and eggs around Ishtar, sun god daytime, and with some of the things like that, it's right here. It says here, you're supposed to literally destroy these things, hate these things, despise these things, but the graven images of their gods you'll burn with fire. Don't even covet the silver or gold that's on them. Don't even take it into you. And furthermore, the next verse really lays that one right out there. It'll be a snare to you, and it is an abomination. Now, that word in Hebrew is toiba. And it is the most powerful word in the language when it comes to something which is not good. Toiba, abomination, is the strongest condemnation there is. And it's the one that I mentioned that was used for dishonest weights and measures, too. Nasty, evil, bad stuff. And, of course, the world reserve currency is toiba. All right. Nor, it says, this is key, nor shall you even bring an abomination into your house and be accursed like it. You're supposed to utterly detest it. You shall utterly abhor it, for it is a ki cherem. I'll say it again. Ki cherem. It is a devoted thing, is literally what that translates. A cursed thing is one way to put it. But it's devoted because it's devoted to something that is antithetical to the God of the Bible. So it's devoted to the wrong thing, basically. All right, chapter 8 then continues, says, all this commandment, the commandment singular, by the way, the instruction, that I command you this day, you shall observe to do, so you might live and multiply and go in and possess the land which Yahuwah swore unto your fathers. And you'll remember all the way that Yahuwah your El has led you, these 40 years out here, Bamidbar, in the wilderness, that he might afflict you to prove you, to test you, in other words, and to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments. And that word there is mitzvot, right? It's his commandment, so it's mitzvotai, or not. Whether you would do what he says or not. And he afflicted you, suffered you to have some hunger, but he did feed you with manna, things you didn't know, nor did your fathers, so that he might make you understand the following. And we've heard this somewhere else before, right? Man does not live by bread alone, but by every debar, everything, every word that proceeds out of the mouth of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, of Yahuwah, does man live. So that, of course, is a very famous place right here from the Torah that is oft quoted in the apostolic writings, the renewed covenant. All right, your clothing didn't get old on your body, nor did your foot swell up. Your sandals didn't wear out. All kinds of things that needed to last did for those entire 40 years. And you shall know this. Now, that word in the Hebrew is yada, right? Remember, you heard the old joke, yada, yada, yada. Just means to know, to know, to know. And it's a kind of a deeper understanding. I've mentioned this before. When I was a kid, I remember reading a book called Stranger in a Strange Land, and the word there was grok, for those that that have ever remembered. So you date yourself, or at least you recognize, if you hear somebody say grok in fullness, you know they got it from that Heinlein book. But the grok word is about as close to a good translation of the Hebrew word yada as you'll find. It doesn't just mean, oh yeah, I know. It means to truly know, to kind of take it to heart, to understand, to really wrap your mind around it. Yeah, grok in fullness. And that's what it is you're supposed to know in your lev, your heart. Just as a man chastens his son, so it is that Yahuwah your El chastens you. Right? We see this. This is a metaphor that appears all over the place in Scripture. If a man loves his son, he chastens him. When he does wrong, he chastens him. And that is what he will do to us. And as a result, it says, you shall keep the commandments of Yahuwah your Elohim to walk in his ways and to fear him. And I've got a note in my margin here on that one because, to my mind, one of the best summaries of that is in John, Yohanan 14:15, where Yeshua says, "If you love me, keep my commandments." And notice it's an if then in that direction. If you love me, or at least if you say you love me, then do. Elsewhere in Luke, he says, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, not do the things I say?" So if you love me, keep my commandments is probably the simplest way to put all of this whole structure about, why do we do all of this stuff that the Bible says? Answer, he says, if you love me, then do it. And if a man loves his son, he in fact will chasten him. And that is the entire structure of what the Torah is all about teaching us. There's blessing and there's cursing. If you walk in obedience, if you do the things he says to do, you'll be blessed. And if not, he will chasten you. And it really is that simple. All right, it goes back and says, okay, for Yahuwah your El is bringing you into a good land. Land with lots of water, fountains, depths, springing forth in valleys and hills. Got wheat, barley, vines, fig trees, pomegranates, lots of olive trees and honey. A land wherein you shall eat bread without scarceness. You won't lack anything in it. A land whose stones are iron and out of whose hills you may dig brass. So lots of good metallurgy, mining to be had as well. And you shall eat and be satisfied and bless Yahuwah your El for the good land which he has given you. Now this is followed by what I think is one of the more interesting commandments and warnings in the section here. So I'll read through it and then we'll pause on it for a second. It says, "Beware lest you forget Yahuwah your El in not keeping his commandments, his ordinances, and his statutes, which I command you to this day." Now, here's another place where I note, of course, people say, oh, well, the law, Moses, the law. Well, Torah is a far bigger thing than just law. So I have some problem with a lot of the English Bibles that say, well, Torah just means law, and the law is done away with, of course. We know that's one of the biggest lies in history. Because instruction is not done away with. Instruction is for our benefit. But when he wants to talk about things that carry the force of law, he does exactly what he did in this verse here. He puts the words in there. And it's commandments, ordinances, and statutes. So it's mitzvot, mishpatim, and hukat. And each of these cases, it's mine. So it's mitzvoti, or mitzvotin, my statutes, my judgments, my commandments, or his in this case, because it's Moshe talking. But when he, Yod-Heh Vav-Heh, talks about him, he puts him in the first person. Moshe is telling you they're his. And there are things that he's commanding this day. So, the problem is, if you do forget him, otherwise, when you've eaten and you're satisfied and you've built all these great houses and you're dwelling in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply and all your silver and gold is multiplied and all that you have is multiplied, you might start getting a little cocky. And your heart be lifted up, and you forget Yahuwah your El, who brought you forth out of the land of Egypt, out of bondage, who led you through that great and dreadful wilderness with a lot of nasty stuff out there. Remember serpents, fiery serpents, scorpions, thirsty ground, no water. He brought forth water for you out of the flinty rock, led you in the wilderness with manna, things your fathers didn't know, so that he might test you and prove you to do you good in the end. Again, as a father loves a son. The problem is, you might end up saying in your heart, ha-ha, it's my power and my might, the wealth, the creations of my hand that have gotten me all of this good stuff. And there is one of the, I guess you'd say, most deadly traps that we could fall into. And this is what he's going to make clear next. You shall remember it is Yahuwah your El. He's the one that has given you the power to get the wealth, so that he might establish his covenant with you as he swore to your fathers and as it is to this day. So it shall be, if you forget Yahuwah your El and you walk after other gods and serve them and worship them, I warn you and I forswear to you this day that you will surely perish, just as the nations that Yahuwah is making perish before you. Now as you go into the land, you too shall perish because you wouldn't hearken. And there's that word. It literally is the root again, shamar, means to hear, but it's not enough to just hear. It's to hear and obey under the voice of Yahuwah your El. And then chapter 9. Now here's part of the verse that we repeat every week. We actually saw it in the Torah last week, but again, we get almost a repetition. It says, Shema Israel, hearken, O Israel, you're now fixing to pass over the Jordan River this day, to go in and dispossess nations greater and mightier than yourself. They got big cities fortified up to heaven, big people too, the Anakim, whom you know of and whom you've heard say, well, who can stand before the sons of Anak? These big dudes, right? So therefore know that Yahuwah, your El, is he who goes over before you. He is a devouring fire. He will destroy them. He'll bring them down before you so that you can, in fact, drive them out, make them perish quickly, as Yahuwah has promised you. Now, don't speak in your heart after that Yahuwah has thrust them out from before you, saying, and this sounds like what we just heard, right? Oh, it's my righteousness, yeah, before Yahuwah that's brought me in to possess this land. It's not. It's the wickedness of these nations that Yahuwah is driving them out before you. And elsewhere we see that literally the land vomits out its inhabitants. And when I read that and think about this land and the nastiness and all the stuff that's going on, I can't help but thinking, you know, we've been vomited out before. He's vomited out other places, other peoples. Sure looks like there may be some vomiting going on here already. All right, not for your righteousness, though, or for the uprightness of your heart, is it that you're going in to possess this land. It's the wickedness of those nations. That's why Yahuwah, your El, is driving them out from before you, so that he might establish the word which he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. So know, therefore, it's not your righteousness for which he's given you this good land to possess it. Because look, guys, we know it, you know it. You are, in fact, and guess what? I guess we still are, a stiff-necked people. So remember, don't forget how you did make Yahuwah kind of angry. He was pretty PO'd in the wilderness. Wroth is one of the ways the English word here is translated. From the day that you went forth out of the land of Mitzrayim, Egypt, till you came here, you have been rebellious against Yahuwah. In Horeb, you made Yahuwah wroth, and he was pretty angered with you, enough to have destroyed you. And then Moshe says, when I was gone up on the mountain to receive those tablets of stone, the covenant that Yahuwah made with you, and I abode there up in the mountain, remember, 40 days, 40 nights. I didn't drink bread nor didn't eat bread nor drink water. And Yahuwah delivered into my hand those two tablets of stone, literally written with the very finger of Elohim. And on them was written according to all the Devarim, the words which Yahuwah spoke with you. In the mountain, you heard them, out of the midst of the fire in the day of that assembly. And it came to pass at the end of those 40 days and nights that Yahuwah gave me those two tablets of stone, the covenant, and he said, get on down, I mean hurry on down, because the people that you brought forth out of Egypt have already started to deal corruptly. They're quickly turning aside from out of the way which I have commanded them, and they've made themselves that molten image, that eglah, that golden calf. And furthermore, Yahuwah spoke to me, and he said, look, I've seen this people, and behold, yep, they really are a stiff-necked lot. So leave me alone, that I might destroy them and blot out their names from under heaven. I'll make out of you, and he's talking to Moshe here, right, a nation mightier and greater than they. So I hurried, I came on down the mountain, and the mountain burned with fire, and those two tablets of the covenant were in my two hands, and I looked, and I saw, and I was kind of PO'd too. You had sinned against Yahuwah, your El. You made that molten calf, turned aside. And so I took hold of those two tablets and I cast them out of my hands, literally smashed them on the ground and broke them before your eyes. And I fell down before Yahuwah, just like at the first, another 40 days and another 40 nights. No more bread, no more water, because of all the sin which you sinned in doing that which was evil in the sight of Yahuwah to provoke him. And I was pretty upset and literally in dread of the anger and hot displeasure, because he was really, really angry with you all to destroy you. But that time he hearkened unto me. He listened and he took what I was saying to heart. Moreover, it says Yahuwah was pretty angry with Aaron too and ready to destroy him. So I prayed for Aaron at the same time. And I took your sin, that calf which you had made, and I burned it with fire and beat it in pieces, grinding it very small until it was fine as dust. Now, this is a place we've talked about before where literally this metaphor of the adulterous wife kind of appears over and over again. This is the first place where what looks like Moses is doing is exactly what's described later, where the priest is to take the wife accused of adultery and see if, in fact, it's true. And the process is almost identical. So what he describes here is what's described there. And I have suggested that when you see Yeshua in Gethsemane later on saying, hey, this cup, right, if it be your will, let this cup pass from me. The cup is the same cup. It's this cup that's given to the adulterous wife. In this case, it was given to the adulterous people. So he beat up the golden calf, dust into pieces, ground it small, cast it into the brook that descended out of the mouth. So he literally made this stuff, put it in the cup, made people drink it. And so that's the end of that story. And furthermore, he says there were other places too, Taberah and Massah and Kibrot Hatta'avah. You made Yahuwah angry. And when Yahuwah sent you from Kadesh Barnea, saying, go up and possess the land that I have given you, well, you rebelled then too. And you didn't believe him. You wouldn't listen. You did not hearken, shamar, unto his voice. So here's the problem. You all have been rebellious against Yahuwah from the day that I knew you. So, again, I fell down before Yahuwah 40 days and 40 nights because Yahuwah had said he was fixing to destroy you. And I prayed unto Yahuwah and I said, O Yahuwah Elohi, destroy not your people and your inheritance that you have redeemed through your greatness and brought forth out of Egypt with a mighty hand. Remember your servants, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Look not unto the stubbornness of this people, nor to their wickedness, nor to their sin, lest the land whence you have brought us out say the following. Hey, you know, maybe it wasn't, he wasn't able to bring them into the land which he promised them. So this is Moshe attempting some reverse psychology. I tend to think this is Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh smiling secretly and saying, oh yeah, Moshe is on top of this. He's starting to get the hang of this. So good job. Anyway, so he makes the argument. Don't do this because it would look like you weren't able to do what you promised. And he brought them out here to slay them in the wilderness. And yet, he said, remember, these are your people, your inheritance, and you brought them out with your great power and your outstretched arm. So Moshe continues his speech, and he says, at that time, Yahuwah then said to me, all right, go get yourself another two tablets of stone. Come back up on the mountain and make also an ark out of wood. And I will write on the tablets the same words that were on the first ones that you broke, and I'll put them. You put them in the ark. So I made an ark out of acacia wood, made two more tablets of stone like the first ones, went up to the mountain with the tablets in my hands, and he wrote on them, according to the first writing, the 10 Devarim, the 10 words, 10 commandments, 10 sayings. But literally Devarim are things or words, which Yahuwah spoke to you in the mountain that day out of the midst of the fire, and he gave them to me. And I turned and I came back down the mountain. I put those tablets in the ark, which I'd made, and there they are, just as Yahuwah commanded me. And the children of Israel then journeyed from Be'erot Bene Ya'akan to Moserah. And there, as you recall, Aaron died. And he was buried. And Eleazar, his son, ministered in the office of the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, in his stead. And y'all journeyed up to Gudgod, and from Gudgod to Yotbah and the brooks of water. And at that time, Yahuwah separated the tribe of Levi to bear the Ark of the Covenant, stand before him to minister and to bless his name as it is unto this day. Now, Levi, remember, doesn't have any portion or inheritance with the others of the 12 tribes. Yahuwah is his inheritance, according to as Yahuwah spoke to him. Now, I stayed in the mount, he continues, just like I did the first time, 40 days, 40 nights, and Yahuwah hearkened to me, and he said he wouldn't destroy you, and he didn't. And Yahuwah then said to me, arise, go before the people, tell them to set out, go forward, and go in and possess the land which I swore to their fathers to give to them. And now, here comes a summary. Now, this is another one of the really key summaries that's, I think, really, it lays it out. And by the way, we're going to see this in the prophets as well. It's in several of the prophecies. There's a great summary too at the end of Ecclesiastes. Shlomo makes a fairly similar statement, phrasing almost the same sentiment in just a couple different ways, but the essence is the same. So now, Israel, what does Yahuwah your Elohim require of you? But to fear Yahuwah your El, to walk in all his ways, and to love him, and to serve Yahuwah your El with all your heart and with all your soul. So that too is part of the Shema, that first commandment in Deuteronomy 6:4. It is the one that when Yeshua is asked, what is the most important commandment? And it's repeated. This is the second time at least that we see it. And he says, this is it. Fear Yahuwah your Elohim, walk in all his ways, to love him, serve him with all your heart and with all your soul. And furthermore, he continues to keep for your own good the commandments of Yahuwah and his statutes, Hukatin, which I command you to this day. Behold, unto Yahuwah your El belongs HaShemayim, the heavens, and the heaven of heavens, and HaAretz, the earth, with everything that's in them. Only Yahuwah had a delight in your fathers to love them, and he chose their seed after them, even you above all peoples, as it is this day. So, therefore, circumcise the foreskin of your heart, and don't be so stiff-necked anymore. For Yahuwah your El, he is Elohim of Elohim, the God of gods, Lord of lords. The great, the mighty, the awesome, the awful Elohim, God who does not regard persons nor take reward. He does execute justice for the fatherless and for the widow. He loves the stranger, gives him food and raiment. So therefore you do that. You love the stranger, because remember, you were strangers in Mitzrayim, in the land of Egypt. And you shall fear Yahuwah your Elohim, him you shall serve, and to him you shall cleave, and by his name you shall swear. He's your glory. He is your El, your God. He's done these things great and tremendous for you, and your eyes have seen them. Your fathers went down into Egypt with just 70 folks, and now Yahuwah your El has made you like the stars of heaven for multitude. So therefore, you shall love Yahuwah your El, keep his charge, his statutes, his ordinances, his commandments. There it again. Notice how many times, just in this portion alone, he's repeating. It's not just the instruction. This is bigger. The instruction is a bigger thing than law. So the instruction, of course, consists of, well, parables, as we see with the Mashiach teaching. It consists of the stories, like this one, and the stories of the fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the stories of the kings, the prophecies, and a lot of stuff. But in particular, when he says keep commandments, he lays it out. Keep his charge, his statutes, his ordinances, his commandments. So it's hukatim, mishpatim, and hukim, those three words in Hebrew. And you know this day, because I'm not speaking with just your children and those that you haven't known and haven't seen the chastisement of Yahuwah, your Elohim, his greatness, his mighty hand, his outstretched arm, his signs, his works, all the things he did with Pharaoh and so forth. What he did to the army of Egypt, their horses, their chariots, the waters of the Red Sea, how they pursued after you and how he destroyed them unto this day. What he did for you and to you out in the wilderness till you came to where we are now. What he did to Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, son of Reuben, how the earth opened up and swallowed them up and their households, everything they had, their tents, all that followed them in the midst of all Israel. Your eyes have seen all of that stuff, the great work which Yahuwah did. Now, interesting, as he is saying this, remember, a whole lot of the people, as promised, those who were over the age of 20 at the point where they had that first recorded vote in human history, right, 10 to 2, Joshua and Caleb lost. The spies said, oh, no, don't believe God. He says go into the land and you can take it. We say there are big dudes there. They're really scary. We're like grasshoppers in their sight. So all of those who went with the majority on that day, and it literally said it was all of the adults, they're all dead at this point. So the ones that are listening to Moshe are, with those two exceptions, Joshua and Caleb, were the ones who were under the age of 20. And nevertheless, it's a clear shot that they certainly had multiple witnesses. They've had years and years of growing up to hear from Uncle Shlomo and their fathers and their grandfathers, all of those other folks, these stories. So they know exactly what Moses is talking about. But your eyes, he said, have seen, in other words, the great work which he did. Now, therefore, you shall keep the commandment which I command you this day. Be strong, go in and possess the land, so that you may prolong your days upon the land which Yahuwah swore to your fathers to give them and to their seed. Yep, a land flowing with milk and honey. This land that you go in to possess, it's not like the land of Egypt when you came out of, where you sowed your seed and watered it with your foot, gardens of herbs. Nope, this land that you're going to possess is a land of hills and valleys, and it drinks water as the rain of heaven comes down. This is a land which Yahuwah Yireh cares for the eyes of Yahuwah are always upon it, from the beginning of the year to the end. Now, here comes another one of these statements. There are so many in this portion and in this section of Scripture. It's why I think when it comes to the heart of the Torah and the things that we have, warned against, we've forgotten, here it is. And it shall come to pass, if you shall hearken, there's that same word, shamar, hear and obey, diligently unto my commandments, which I command you to this day, to love Yahuwah your El. That sounds familiar, right? To serve him with all your heart and with all your soul, that these good things will happen. I will give you rain the rain of your land in its season, former rain, latter rain, that you might gather in your corn, your wine, your oil. I'll give you grass in the fields for your cattle. You'll eat and you'll be satisfied. Take heed to yourselves, lest your heart be deceived and you turn aside and serve other gods and worship them. For the anger of Yahuwah will, in fact, be kindled against you, and he'll shut up the heavens so that there won't be any rain. The ground won't yield her fruit, and you will perish quickly off the good land which he is now giving you. So therefore you shall lay up my words in your heart, and in your soul you shall bind them as a sign upon your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. Now remember, folks, this is, if you will, part two of the Shema. We read this part every week, and for those that remember the Hebrew tradition, this is one of those traditions that Rabbinic Judaism keeps, and I think, well, it's a literal understanding. It's a pretty good one. They literally take these very words from Deuteronomy 6:4, and this one here, about bind this as a sign upon your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes, and they write them on a little piece of paper and put them in a little box, and the little box goes on the door, on the doorpost, and the word doorpost is mezuzah, or mezuzot in the plural, and you'll see them on the doorpost. And what's interesting, of course, is it continues, and listen to this part. You shall teach them to your children, talking of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. And you shall write them on the mezuzot, the doorposts of your house, and upon your gates. And indeed, that is literally, write them on the doorpost, and there they are. So that your days may be multiplied, and the days of your children on the land which Yahuwah swore to your fathers to give them, as the days of the heavens above the earth. For if you diligently keep all this commandment which I command you, to do it, to love Yahuwah your El, to walk in all his ways, and to cleave unto him, then Yahuwah will do exactly as promised. He will drive out all of those nations from before you. You'll dispossess nations greater and mightier than yourselves. Every place wherein the sole of your foot shall tread is yours. From the wilderness, from Lebanon to the river Euphrates. So you got the river Nile, you've got several rivers that are talked about. So Euphrates, though, is generally the river, and the Jordan is the other river that we're going to talk about passing over here. Unto the Hinder Sea, in other words, the would be the western border of what is now current-day Israel. No man will be able to stand against you. Yahuwah your El shall lay the fear of you and the dread of you upon all the land that you tread upon, as he has spoken to you. So there it is. That's the place where the Torah portion, Ekev, ends. And it ends in another place that we'll get to next week, but with yet another one of those real clear dichotomies. So I'm going to read the next verse that begins next week's portion, just because it's also a great way to kind of wrap things up. Behold, he says, I set before you this day a blessing and a curse. So the central element and the theme that has now been laid out, that we're going to see expounded upon again next week as we go through all of this, is the idea of luck. This is an open book test. This is all about blessings and cursings. It's not about a law that nobody can possibly keep. That's one of those huge lies. Yeshua never said so. He said he's not changing the tiniest bit of it. And as we're going to see here in just a few weeks, the Torah says you can do it. It's not too hard for you. So anybody tells you nobody can keep the law, it's too hard, they're a liar and the truth is not in them. But what is true is if you attempt to walk in blessings and you do the best you can, he says there'll be blessings for walking in obedience. And yes, as a father chastens the son whom he loves, there are cursings, there are chastenings for rebellion. And as an engineer, I'd say, well, what it is, it's a feedback loop. Right? It's a positive feedback loop. Says if you're off course, you get a gentle nudge back in the direction that you're supposed to go. And if you're off course more, you get a bigger nudge. And I guess if you get off course a lot, eventually you get a slap. And if you continue to go off course, eventually you get kicked out of the land, which is what we're seeing as well.